Hello and welcome. I want to talk in this video about the shame that men internalize from the time they're infants and how it's used like a hammer to beat men and boys into submission. Yeah, everywhere you turn in society, you hear the same message that masculinity is in crisis. The males are just refusing to man up and are instead choosing to wallow in perpetual adolescence. But what's never mentioned is that every path, now, every avenue on the road to a man defining his masculinity has been stripped away. And one of my favourite writers is Norman Mailer. Mailer, he stated that there's no greater impotence in this life than knowing you are right and that the wave of the world is wrong, yet that wave crashes upon you. Now, I spent my early years trying to understand why so much contempt and blame was directed at me growing up. Why it was somehow my responsibility that bad things happened in the world, and why I was to blame for the actions of every individual man. And I spent the next years of my life trying to control the anger and all the volatile emotions inside me from erupting, scared of their intensity and not understanding it. I then spent a number of years trying to reach men, and I had some success, maybe because I was going through it too. But I used their experience to grow and understand my own. And I engaged with the express goal of reaching these men, but also furthering my understanding and mastery over myself. And many times, just like you and the man next to you, I stared into the abyss of manhood, and the abyss stared back. And it was touch and go, but we finally agreed to disagree, and I went my own way. The way I connected with other males growing up was the same as any other man. You know, I connected through violence, through alcohol, through guarded interactions. You know, always watching if the man next to me would fail or show weakness. And then I could go on the attack and prove my masculinity while deriding his. But the bond that men can experience, you know, the knowledge that men can pass from one to another, the respect that comes from these interactions, this can't be replicated through interactions with females. Because ask yourself, how many women do you respect? And I'm not talking about a judgment based on that woman's behavior or on her perspectives on men or what have you, but a respect based solely on the value she adds to your life in terms of passing on knowledge and from a mutual admiration and understanding. Because if you think back to the friendships, you know, you had with boys when you were a kid, you know, how open and free many of these interactions were, the bonds that you developed through sports or, you know, going on adventures together, what have you. Because I recall having these friendships only with the weaker kids because, you know, I felt protective of them. So I gave myself permission to be open, and they weren't a direct physical threat to me or direct competition. And this open bonding, it's fleeting, or it's non-existent for most adult males. You know, what instead passes for male bonding are social interactions where communication is very restrictive. And conversation is restricted to money, to sex, and seeking female approval. And the male in the group who doesn't conform to these rigid expectations, he's mocked, or he's peer pressured until he does conform. And men, they police their male peers. They've internalized their self-hatred of their own sex to the point that they're now enforcers of their own misery. These men, they look in the mirror and they see an empty reflection, a photo negative, but no identity, no purpose without the validation of the female. And you see this with your male friends currently or in the past. If that man doesn't have a female in his life for even 5 minutes, he's mocked for being a homosexual or for not being a real man. These men, they receive the same shaming tactics from female partners and friends. Because women, just like their male peers, they monitor very closely male-male interactions. Because a woman knows all too well she can influence the bonds between men with a simple inference of homosexuality or lessened masculinity. She can tar a man with a white feather any time she chooses. And with me, I mean, I can read a man within a few moments of meeting him. I can read his body language, his handshake, you know, what's living in his eyes. I can read his intonation, the first words out of his mouth. You know, all familiar patterns. I can see it, you know, insecurity, masked by overcompensating. I can read apprehension, fear. Well, I can see that pervading sadness I see in the eyes and posture of so many men. And I find myself in the company of men at functions or in social situations, and the experience for me is like chewing on nails. And it feels literally like a part of me is dying listening to these men. Listening to these men just go through the motions. You know, no substance to their interactions. Listening to them limiting themselves. Yeah, a slave to the ex-wife. A slave to their current woman who has restricted his interactions with other men to the bare minimum. Yeah, his friends now are almost a distant memory. In the male experience for most men, that experience is one of shame. And if we reflect on the family unit and the shame response you see in children when a parent shows disapproval, you see that child collapse into themselves. Now, the body seeks to protect itself, and the child may disassociate, and everything gets blocked out. And a simple look of contempt from a parent can cause this. And we need to understand how powerful mothers are in this dynamic. And this again will no doubt be interpreted as an attack on women or on the role of mothers, but far from it. It's simply an acknowledgement of how much influence a mother exerts over a son. And where there's influence, there needs to be responsibility, needs to be accountability, and most importantly, acknowledgement. And we can't address what isn't acknowledged. And the bond between a mother and a child, it's a very complex neurochemical process. Because our first experience of touch, of safety and nourishment, come at the hands of our mother. And also our first experiences of pleasure. You know, our mother's face, her voice. All of this stimulates physiological responses. And it's our first and most powerful experience of attachment. And when we talk of the sexual power of women, and the power that mothers have over their sons, and about male mother need, we need to understand the power inherent in this bond. And yes, we all have mother issues. Come on, say it out loud. Claim it. Because men need to move past shame. They need to move past it so they can acknowledge this power. This male mother need. Men spend their life chasing the replication of these early experiences. And it's the strongest drug. I mean, look at what men sacrifice. We fight wars. We die in the trenches just for the promise of it. For just a pat on the head. Yeah, they say that people's greatest fear is public speaking. But for men, it's the replication of a mother's disapproval in the face of a woman they may not even know. And for men to say that they've woken up and now they're past women, that they no longer need female validation, I mean, to say that without them first gaining insight into their own responses and an understanding of their own mental processes, that doesn't fly either. Because it's a constant forge to get to a place where you have understanding and autonomy over your life. Because like they say, it takes wisdom to understand, but it takes courage to walk away. And that courage, it comes from insight and from establishing a network of support, because no man is an island unto himself, nor should he have to be. And we're not talking about celibacy, and that's up to the individual man. We're talking about self-analysis. You're coming to an understanding of how to navigate your environment safely and on your own terms. And it shouldn't be a pissing contest, where men slap their ego on the table and say, hey, I've got a handle on it. It should be about sharing knowledge, you know, sharing perspectives and experiences, and an open admission of vulnerability. Now, it's about kicking through that first door. You kick that bitch off its hinges, and you watch the emotions flood in. Because every man I've seen make the transition of moving to a self-aware state, where he's no longer a prisoner to his environment, where he can safely move away from peer pressure and from those internal messages that cause him to lash out or self-punish, all it took was one push. One push in the company of other men who express their vulnerability. That's the power of male support. And yeah, I mean, we need to pick our brothers wisely. Because if they're poison, we need to cut them out of our life like a cancer. Yet we find the courage to walk away. Because we know the true value of our time. We have self-value. And if that can't be respected, we need to move on. And yeah, I mean, you can reach out. You can have friendships with men that don't share your worldview. That's fine. Because we can all benefit from building those networks and benefit from that exchange of knowledge. But those men, they need to respect you. And the key is to be present and engaged, but not too familiar. That way you ensure that they respect your space and that they don't feel entitled to place peer pressure on you. You keep them at arm's length. But looking online, I mean, what we have online is something very special. And I've only ever seen it replicated in group therapy, with men right on the edge. What we have is a no-judgment-free zone, devoid of shaming. And I'm not including detractors or those with agendas relating to money or insecurity or politicking. I'm talking about this little nucleus of men that's growing every day. Men who are asking questions, who are claiming their right to express their experiences no matter how painful they are, and who are demanding to be heard. And looking back on it, I never used to like looking in the mirror. I never got close enough, because I never liked what was behind my eyes. It was fear. I saw confusion, I saw sadness. But I look in the mirror now, and I see concentrated strength. And I train my thoughts and my mind like any other muscle. And there's two places that I consider my temple. Out in the wild, when I'm out on trips, hiking in the bush or on trails. When I'm alone at night, with me and the stars. There, in that space, I can engage in a visualization process. And the other place is the gym. Where in the gym, I'm always in process of replicating an experience of mind-body connection that I first experienced a few years ago. And I'm not saying men should get in the gym. I don't advocate the gym to any man. I mean, we all have different interests and hobbies, things that we're good at and what brings us joy and contentment. And we should focus on pursuing those interests if they bring us joy. But for me, what I found during a year of having to rehabilitate my body coming out of a coma, what I discovered was a mind-body connection for the first time in my life. I found my core, my body, my mind, my spirit. And for the first time, I found focus. Standing up for the first time after that coma was like my Mount Everest, because I didn't know if I could ever walk again. Then I took my first steps, one after another. And it took me months, but I did it. And all there was in my life at that time was focus. And I shut everything out. I turned away from people. And I was in a process of reinventing myself, but it was a process where I was flying blind. I had no insight. I had no idea where I was going. So, of course, it was a case of one step forward, two steps back. But, I looked inside, but also at the reality around me. And I looked at how males are defined today. And there's truth in it, that men today have been left with no way to have value attributed to them via their roles in society. Because traditional worker roles, they're being phased out. And males are demeaned and blamed collectively at every turn. But for myself, and many males that I knew, I grew up resenting other men. I grew up resenting traditional roles. It's often stated that males or boys feel disempowered because they can't assume these traditional roles. But I never felt that. I resented those roles, those standards. I grew up like many other boys, feeling a void inside me, and not knowing any way to fill it. And I had no respect for other men or for their roles as providers. I saw how fathers were portrayed by the media. I also saw how their wives and their kids and other women viewed them as just non-sexual walking jokes. So, I couldn't mourn for something I never attributed any value to. So that reasoning that men are grieving for a return to the good old days of traditional manhood, that doesn't hold weight. Not for the majority of men from my generation. And we have yet to acknowledge this as a society. Instead, it's just leveled at men. It's leveled at men as a shaming tactic. That men are insecure and scared that women are taking their roles in society. Well, those women are welcome to our cubicles. the male spirit was never meant to be shackled to a desk. And it's the male void that needs to be addressed. And a return to traditional roles that enforce servitude of men, that enforce men as utilities, is not the answer. It's not even a band-aid. And the choices for men, they're limited, if men choose to conform. And conformity, it comes in the shape of man choosing to be just like his father, living a shallow existence where his needs are secondary at best, or living toxic, acting out, fucking, fighting, self-immolation. Or they can just be all alpha. They can be a player, trying desperately to grasp onto any last remnants of masculinity that haven't yet been eroded by ridicule or criticism. Trying desperately to connect with their base male nature by getting in the gym in any other ways that they can. Not for themselves, but so they can be the man that women want and admire. In other words, a utility. And all these choices carry immense risk. But really, they're just ultimatums framed as choices. Because the gun is at your head. Conform or face exclusion. If you ever talk with an addict, a drug addict or a gambler, a gambler will tell you that the rush of losing is stronger than the high of winning. The physiological response, it's more intensified. You look at men. Men walk that razor with women and with self-harming behaviors all the time. You can point out the dangers and they can be consciously aware of them. But that rush of walking on the knife edge, it can be addictive. You can interact with a woman, and we all have a type that we're attracted to. And for me, unfortunately, it's usually the ones with tattoos on their neck and all the drama that comes with that. The type. And the attraction is mutual. I meet a woman like that and it's electric. And when we talk about enabling, that's exactly what it is. You're aware of the wreckage that can ensue from this union, but the pull from this attraction, it can literally be like being carried back into the womb. And it's related to how we attach and bond in our early years. You get bounced around from caregiver to caregiver, and the ability to bond with people, it will be seriously impaired. We all read people. It's a continual process of receiving and interpreting feedback. And it's how we develop our early identity. And if a boy fails to bond in his early years, he can't develop a strategy to interact with others, and they often reject him as a result. And often this results in him internalizing this. And he's initially confused by their responses to him. And then he becomes resentful. And then society pays the price. Or he just becomes another statistic. And if a child's parent rejects him, or just abandons their role as caregiver, the child, they internalize this, and they'll believe it's their own fault, that they're not worthy of love, that they've driven the parent away. Feelings of shame, that's the fallout. Now, if you think about the messages that boys receive, that boys don't cry and all the rest of it, you think about the language leveled against them if they show weakness, all the shaming and dismissiveness from peers, from the parents, and from other adults, and how all of that builds into a nucleus of shame, how it feeds into the existing self-belief that they're not worthy of attention or respect. So they can't attach, they can't bond. They're either unable or won't allow themselves to experience intimacy. I mean, how can they if they think they're not worthy of friendship or love? I mean, if they believe they can't keep someone interested long enough to stick around, they're terrified that caregivers and friends and later partners will abandon them. And the body and mind will do all it can to protect them. So what happens? I mean, we replace the feelings of shame with other emotions. Anger usually being the go-to for many men. Anything to stop them from feeling hopeless and inadequate. And that's the tip-off point. And what comes next is acting out. Numbing behaviors, drugs, sex, alcohol, and violence, withdrawal. And the shame, it then gets reinforced. They feel shame for indulging in these behaviors. And, we all know that anger is a cover emotion, and that aggression and fear, that they're the same animal. Yet as a society, we have yet to make this link. We have yet to make this connection with violent men. Instead, what happens? Instead, we point the finger at males. We condemn masculinity at every turn. And we blame testosterone, male sexuality, everything else. But we never accept that the man acting out is acting from a place of extreme fear and internalized shame. But every negative thought you have, is an opportunity to challenge that thought. I often say to people, when they're trying to argue a point, I say to them that at the very least, do me the courtesy of being informed before you make a statement. Or at the very least, listen, acknowledge, then speak. And when you speak, form your words into the shape of a question as opposed to a statement. Then you might actually learn something. But people, of course, they block out the point I'm making. And the point I'm making is that the man who's asking the questions, he's the smartest man in the room. Because he's going to take that information and apply it. Unlike everyone else, he's not looking for excuses not to proceed. But, so many men are afraid to ask the questions. Because most men, when faced with the truth, if they see the statistics relating to any number of issues facing men and boys, or if half their friends are taken to the cleaners by their ex-wives, or if they themselves were victims of female perpetrators, these same men will just block out the truth, or they'll just convince themselves that they and other men were deserving of this treatment. Just look at the state of things for males right now. All there is scraps and misandry. And we've been backed into a corner. And we can fight head on, or we can go our own way. And men can bang on all day long about reclaiming masculine roles and stepping up to become the man that women desire, or about changing or gaming the system. But after decades of browbeating and internalized shame, it's going to take a bit more than a hard sell and some shaming tactics. Look at it. Men are literally opting out of reproduction. Consider that fact. Look at the suicide statistics. Men are dropping out in all areas of society. When you believe that you have no worth to offer, and that the world has no value to offer you, and that you're the problem, and that you're not deserving of respect or affection, and that you have no right to mourn for what you've lost, and that you're not deserving of joy or happiness, and that the only answer is to live dead inside, and that the options presented to you only reinforce this pain. And is it any wonder that self-medication or death seems like the only viable options for a man to end his pain? But the only way to beat demons are to hit them head on. And exposure therapy, it works for a reason. You know, we beat down those defenses. We take ownership of our fear. We take ownership of our shame. And we create networks of support with men who will respect us and challenge us to think and feel more deeply. And we forgive ourselves. And we attribute blame to where it belongs. Through understanding the motivations of others, we forgive. And not forgiveness for what was done to us, but so we can let go and move forward. Yet we own our experiences and our pain. And we understand it wasn't our fault. So that can't be used to shame us or force us to conform anymore. Because right now, we're laying the foundation. And this is our awakening. One by one.